countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from ABR. The ABR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, April 6, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody, got a little echo there.
Yeah, I hear.
I don't know if the public hears it or not, but we could hear it. And it's, you know, it's one of those things you're kind of giving the public two shows for the price of one.
There you go.
Understand?
We don't have to repeat ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, somebody's listening. The echo. Hello, hello. Good afternoon. Let's see. Gold today had a little bit of an echo, had a little bit of a hiccup. It's now beginning to go reverse itself a little bit. We had a high of almost 1225 today, and it is settling 1216.50. Up 13.50. You have silver up 24 cents at 17.10. Platinum is up 23 at 11.82. Palladium up 22 at 772.
What's moving platinum and palladium?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure. They were hit pretty hard there for a while. I mean, you had palladium that was, you know, closing in at 850, so I don't know if they're just reversing itself. I think ultimately the precious metals sector, these four metals, usually follow one another. Platinum is, you know, people want to diversify, and going into platinum, it might be a little bit of a good buy right now, because usually it trades higher than gold. There could be some problems in the mines, but you know, they've certainly have, particularly palladium, they've for the past couple of days, but we'll just see if it's a continued trend or not. The USDX today was up 31 at 97.05, and you have crude oil up 280 at 51.94. Paper markets today, we're going to talk about the job report on Friday. Basically, markets should be down a few hundred points, but you have, people had the weekend to think about it, have a little of those chocolate eggs, and get a little bit of high and come into work on Monday. But it was a light trading day today. You had the Dow up 118 points at 17,882. The NASDAQ was up 30 at 49.17. The S&P was up 13 at 2,080. European markets were closed for Easter Monday. The 10-year yield today, 1.90%. And the euro, even though is up, is off its 110 at 109. So, as aftermarket trading. So, you know, it was a quiet day on the markets. But it was a good day in gold. And we'll see how gold plays out for the week. The only report that came out today, we have a manufacturing report. Well, there's also one for, let me see if I can find that report here, the service industry. The Institute for Supply Management for Services said that the index slipped to 56.5 last month from 56.9 in February. So not a big slip, but still a slip from the month before. So, and, you know, as far as the manufacturing report that came out, that was also slightly lower, too. So,
well, the big news last Friday, again, the jobs,
absolutely,
the economy. Here's an article from the New York Times. U.S. economy gained 126,000 jobs in March, an abrupt slowdown in hiring. As it turns out, in 2014, the reported average, was the creation of an additional 269,000 jobs a month. But in March, all right, we had just 126,000 new jobs in March. That's less than half of what we'd averaged in 2014. People are concerned, is this signal a reversal in the U.S. economy, a significant step downward, or is it just an aberration and we'll get over it next month? What do they have for an excuse here? Analysts blame the plunge on oil prices, or blame the plunge in oil prices, as well as the pall cast by a difficult winter across the Northeast and Midwest, a combination that put a crimp on spending in the energy patch and held back consumer spending and construction. That sounds like a bunch of nonsense to me. Again, this is the second year they have blamed a bad month or even a bad quarter on the difficult winter we had. And we talked about this, Melanie and I were talking about this earlier, and my suggestion is that Obama issue an executive order to outlaw winter. And thereby, we won't have this. Then we can be assured that we won't have a problem with a severe winter next winter that messes up our economy next spring. So, Melody, do you think Obama's listening? Do you think he'll take our advice and issue an executive order to outlaw winter? Or do you think they'll keep winter instead of outlawing it? Maybe they'll keep it as a credible excuse. It's kind of like keeping the dog so it can eat your homework.
Well, I'm sure they're listening, but whether they're listening as far as doing an executive order, that remains to be seen.
Don't think so. No, probably not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
That means next spring, things go south next spring. Doesn't matter if they had a snowflake up in Minnesota. That will be sufficient excuse to justify a bad month in March.
I mean, I can get bad. I understand bad weather, and I can understand like what happened to Boston. You're certainly going to have some sort of an impact in their local economy. You know, you have a lot of stores and small-time stores, family-owned mom-and-pop shops that they depend.
It happens every year. I mean, we have winter every year.
Let me finish.
Been going on since the country began.
There's a big difference between being closed one day and being closed for a week or more, you know, due to some of that weather in Boston. And agreed, yes, it happens every winter, but they did have significant snowfall, and they were closed where people couldn't get out to do their normal routine. So local commerce, yes, I could accept the fact that the local commerce could have an impact from the weather, and I'm strictly talking Boston. And, of course, you had, what was the one little city in New York on the west part of it that had, to the very beginning, they had like, you know, 5 feet of snow or something like that. I can't recall which city that was. It can have a temporary impact.
Yeah, but
none of this to affect the no, to affect the country, no.
None of this is possible because Al Gore, he's the guy that invented the internet, as you may know. Al Gore says we have global warming. So how do we have worse winter weather when we have global warming? Huh? Answer me that one.
I get it.
Uh-huh.
I get it.
I don't know. It's just, it's, I don't know. I don't have an explanation. You know, I can sit back and take pot shots at these people. I don't have an explanation, but I just wish they would have some sort of a coherent act. They're going to lie to us. They should get their stories straight. Somebody's going to talk about global warming. Fine, talk about global warming. Going to talk about a bad winter. Okay, talk about a bad winter. But what do we do when we have bad winter plus global warming? I don't know. It's not impossible. It's not an impossible contradiction. But still, it's just another one of those things that casts doubt. Are they telling us the truth, Melody? Are they capable of telling us the truth? And the answer, just steadily, regularly, appears to be no. No, and nobody seems to mind. If they don't tell us the truth, no big deal. We don't care. Let us lie. Let them lie. Let them lie. It doesn't matter. The government can lie to us all they want, and everybody will put up with it. And, you know, this goes to the idea that we are living in an economy rather than in a nation. In a nation, we are concerned primarily, I mean, the two overlap. They're not mutually exclusive. And a nation has an economy. An economy typically has one or more nations associated with it. But they are two different systems of value. The nations have a system of value that is primarily, not exclusively, but primarily based on right and wrong. You get into an economy, it's based, the system of values is primarily based on profit and loss. And the economy is dangerous. When you do your thinking in terms of the economy, you allow that to dominate in the sense that Bill Clinton, when he was first elected, he was telling his staff, it's the economy, stupid. That's what everybody cares about. Pocketbook issues. And he's right. That's what people care about. But I'm just suggesting we would be better off if we sat back and said, you know, maybe we need to think about what's right and wrong here a little bit. Not just what's profitable. It is because certain things are profitable that people will legalize drugs. Government sitting back and saying, my God, think of the taxes we could make off those drugs. We can't stop them. We need the money. Why don't we legalize them? All right? It's not a question of right and wrong. It's a question of profit and loss. Where's the money? They're in an economy. They just want the money. It's the same thing with prostitution and pornography. Not a question of right and wrong. It's increasingly a question of, well, gee, look at how much money you can make. I don't think the nation is well served by having us adopt these economic values rather than the moral values that are more common in the nation. And I think the shift between these two systems of values, it's not absolute, but we are increasingly in an economy. And so far as that's true, we're going to pay a price for it. Because in the end, we need to be able to rely on our government. We need to be able to rely on the economy. We need to be able to rely on our neighbors. We need to think that, look, they're going to do what's right rather than whatever can make a fast buck. Because while it's easy for me to sit back and say, ha-ha, I can make some fast money. We've got an angle here in the economy, and I can get rich. All right, well, that seems pretty cool from my perspective. But what if the guy across the street, he sees an angle where he can get rich? It may be that he's going to get rich at my expense. All right, we overlook when we can make the money for ourselves, we say hooray. but we overlook that other people can make money for themselves at our expense. And maybe we can curtail that if we adopt a system of values that has more to do with right and wrong than profit and loss. If we could get back to that moral system of values rather than the economic system of values, maybe I wouldn't have to worry about, the neighbor wouldn't have to worry about me working some scam where I can exploit him. I wouldn't have to worry about him working some scam to exploit me. We might not have to worry about the government trying to exploit us. I think the country would be better off. I know most people who are in positions of power would disagree, say, that guy's crazy. We can go out here and get money, baby. Well, I know. But I think in the long run, I think this is going to hurt us. We have to return to a moral system of values of a nation rather than accept the values of an economy. So, got another article here from GoldEagle.com. It says gold flat in quarter in dollars, but 11% higher in euro and 5% higher in pounds. What they're illustrating is that the price of gold is rising around the world except here in the United States. It's up 11% in terms of euros, and it's up 5% in terms of the pounds sterling in England. And I bring it to people's attention because although it's confusing, it's down, or it's been at least flat for the first quarter in this country. The reason gold is not doing as well here as it is in other countries is because it's being measured in terms of dollars. And the dollars are rising in purchasing power, at least they have been. They rose close to 25% the last 8 or 9 months of last year. And because the dollar became more valuable, the price of gold seemed to fall. Complex, confusing, but the fact remains, without getting in any deeper than I already am, than I already have, the fact remains that the price of gold has been rising around the world because their currencies are falling, and it's been falling in this country, or at least holding flat, because the dollar's going up. The question becomes, how much longer can the dollar continue to rise? If we're going to see a reversal in the dollar and it goes back to losing value, instead of being subjected to deflation where it gains the value and purchasing power, are we going to see the dollar lose value and purchasing power, which is a restoration of inflation? If we go back to inflation, the price of dollars will go, or the price of gold will go up in terms of dollars. In the midst of all of this, as confusing as it may be, we're left to wonder, do we even want to think about things and values? Do we want to think about these things in terms of fiat dollars, fiat euros, fiat pounds? Because it's confusing, and it's hard to track, and it's subject to manipulation, where instead, if we sat back and said, I'm not going to think in terms of how much wealth I have. I'm not going to measure it in terms of fiat dollars, which are constantly changing in value. I'm going to measure my wealth in terms of how many ounces of gold and how many ounces of silver I have. And those ounces are steady, right? You may add to it or subtract to it, but the ounces themselves are fixed and steady and something you can count on. And so long as that's the case, it's hard to do because we live in a world that's dominated by fiat currencies. It's hard to make the switch in thinking to where you think in terms of gold, you think in terms of silver, you think in terms of ounces rather than fiat dollars, fiat euros, fiat pounds. But it may be a more sensible way to count your wealth. It may be the kind of thing that while the rest of the world is confused and bamboozled by fiat currencies, you sit back and say, no, I have 100 ounces, I have 1,000 ounces, I have 5,000 ounces. You know, I can measure my wealth that way, and I'm not going to worry about the fiat because it's unstable, it's flexible, it's, you know, it's, you can't count on it. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners to visit our website at DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. It's a pretty awesome newsletter. It's free, and it is only online. We don't send out hard copies of that nature, because we don't charge you for it, but it does come out every Monday. So make sure you give us a call for all your gold and silver coin needs, 1-800-375-4188, and visit the website dgscoins.com.
An article here from Bloomberg dealing with Larry Summers. He is a former Treasury Secretary and a Democrat. And according to Bloomberg, the article, the headline is, Larry Summers, the past month may go down as a turning point for U.S. economic power. Bloomberg characterizes Summers' remarks as a scathing message. And Summers says, in part, he says, this past month may be remembered as the moment the United States lost its role as the underwriter of the global economic system. True, there have been any number of periods of frustration for the U.S. before, and times when American behavior was hardly multilateralist, such as the 1971 Nixon shock, ending the convertibility of the dollar into gold. But I can think of no event since Bretton Woods comparable to the combination of China's efforts to establish a new institution, and he's talking about the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. He says, I can think of no event since Bretton Woods comparable to the combination of China's effort to establish a major new institution, the AIIB, the, again, Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, and the failure of the U.S. to persuade dozens of traditional allies, starting with Britain, to stay out of it. All right? Summers is referencing the new Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, China's 18-month-old plan to start the first new multilateral development lender in decades. More than 40 countries applied to be founding members, including China, Australia, Egypt, Ukraine, the United Kingdom, France, Switzerland, India, and South Korea. Many of these people, most of them, are pretty much deemed to be our allies with the perhaps, you know, it's hard to say that China's our ally, but, and Obama said, hey, look, let's leave it alone. You know, let's not get involved in this. And virtually the rest of the world said, we don't care what you say, Obama. And we've talked about this in the past. We talked about this last week. And Summers is pretty much agreeing with what we pointed out. We said, look, this, the bank itself at the moment is maybe $50 billion and supposed to be capitalized altogether at $100 billion, at least initially. It'll probably grow. Right? It'll get much bigger than that. But initially, it's not that big. The bank isn't that big, but the reaction from people that we should be able to count on as allies, that's the story here. They're jumping on to this new bank that's going to lend Chinese yuan more so than anything else. I'm sure other currencies, I assume other currencies will also be available, but this is sidestepping the dollar, and that's the story. And it's not being sidestepped just by China. We could sidestep by China. We could sit back and say, oh, China and maybe Russia are combining to create something. We could say the BRICS are combining to create some sort of a bank that bypasses the U.S. dollar. It's significant, but it's not such a big thing if it were only the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. For only that, wouldn't it be significant, but it's not that big. This is 40 nations have jumped on this to be founding members, and other nations will now join. It's too late to join as a founding member, but there'll be other nations that are going to get, that are going to do business with this new bank. And the significance of doing business with a new bank is that the transactions will be conducted in currencies other than the fiat dollar. Now, if they don't need the fiat dollar, the primary basis for value for the fiat dollar is found in the fact that the world regards it as the world reserve currency, and they value it precisely for that reason. They see it as the petrodollar, or at least they have, since most of the time since 1971 when Nixon went off the gold standard, and they essentially established an agreement with Saudi Arabia and then OPEC, where if they would agree, we would give protection to Saudi Arabia. I don't have no idea what we gave to OPEC. But the deal was they agreed that they would only sell their crude oil for U.S. dollars. And when that happened, they created the petrodollar. Anyone in the global market, the international market, who wanted crude oil had to have dollars. The dollars were intrinsically worthless after Nixon stopped backing them with gold in 1971 on the international level. They were intrinsically worthless, but because everyone needed dollars in order to buy crude oil, and virtually everyone needed crude oil, there was a foreign demand for dollars. And that demand created the perceived value in the dollars. right? It's that demand for petrodollars which has made our fiat currency appear to be valuable for, what, 40-some years. But what we're seeing here and what Mr. Summers is complaining about is with the new bank, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, they're going to be doing business without dollars. If they don't need dollars, then what is the value of the dollar? Insofar as the dollar as a petrodollar, as the world reserve currency, it assumed value because people wanted it. Not because it had intrinsic value, but because the government had created a brilliant scheme to give value to the fiat dollar. That scheme is now breaking. And the world is essentially reacting to it. And it's not simply, you know, some people are complaining that, oh my gosh, we have nations that are running to join this bank that's going to be established by China, primarily. And people are concerned that the Chinese bank is attracting allies. Well, it's not just Chinese bank attracting allies. It's also that the United States government has abused the powers that are associated with having the world reserve currency. We've abused the powers that were associated with having the world's petrodollar. We've been able to get over on people and give them intrinsically worthless pieces of paper as payments for their goods and services. And as the world slowly figured this out, they have come to be angry about it. They know they're getting ripped off. And as they realize they're being ripped off, they start to back up and they say, wait a second. I don't want to do business with these dollars anymore. I'm going to do business in the Chinese yuan. We'll see what happens there. It's not as if we assume that the Chinese bankers are inherently more honest than the bankers of the United States. The central bank of China is inherently more honest than the Federal Reserve. But we're going to assume that China will at least give us a straight shot at when they are beginning with their new currency. Well, not a new currency per se, it's still the yuan, but when they begin to become more significant in world trade, maybe we'll get a fair shake. Maybe we'll get the transparency that has been promised by the Obama administration and the Federal Reserve. Maybe we'll get it out of China when we didn't get it out of the government of the United States. Beyond that, there's implication here that some of even our best allies are saying, look, the United States is so deep in debt, they can't pay their existing debt. All right? We need to find another boat. These nations that are running over to the Asian investment or the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, they're like rats leaving a sinking ship. And the United States government, the federal bank, by implication, that's the sinking ship. And the rats are saying, I don't think this thing's going to stay afloat much longer. I'm going over to this Asian bank. Right? Thank God we've got an island to swim to or an option or a choice. All of this has caused Mr. Summers to think that last month when the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank essentially went online. Well, they haven't really started doing business. They expect them to start. They'll be open for business before the end of the year, but they're laying their foundation right now. And they got more than 40 banks to join them, including some of our best allies. He's saying this is a signal that people should be paying attention to. It shouldn't have been allowed to happen. He thinks it could have been prevented, that we might have been able to maintain support from our allies. He thinks it's been mishandled by the Obama administration. I'm not sure that it's been mishandled. I don't know that there's anything Obama could have done about this, and I'm no fan of Obama. I think we have simply reached a point, and this happens every time some country has the world reserve currency. Everyone who has the option They abuse the power. All right? And the people eventually figured out they abandoned the world whatever is the world reserve currency, look for another world reserve currency. And then that one, abuses people and exploits the powers that's associated. They abandoned that one, moved to the next one. There's got to be some sort of a lesson here that you want to stay away from the world reserve currencies, I suppose. That's the lesson, but who can resist? If it spins, people are going to sit back and say, yay, this is more money and we can spend it. And we, pay it off in cheaper dollars, borrow some today, pay it off in cheaper dollars. There's a lot of apparent advantages, but those advantages at one end are paid for by losses at the other end, by other nations, other peoples. They finally get fed up with the losses and they say, we need a new game. And that may be what's happening right now. And Summers thinks that what we saw last month is going to mark a real significant turning point. And I don't know that I agree with Summers to the extent that he talks about this and he worries about it, but I don't doubt it's significant. And the great significance, again, is not that China set up a new bank. It's not about the bank. It's about the number of foreign countries that have joined this bank as founding members. Many of them are apparent allies of the United States, including Great Britain. And they just said, hey, Obama said, don't do that. Stay away. Maintain the existing system. Support the petrodollar. And even some of our best allies have said, nope, can't do it. Goodbye. What have you done for us lately? And where are you headed? You've got to be making decisions to the decision to join up with the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. That decision is in part for many of these people based on what they think the United States is going to do. What's going to happen in the future? In a sense, this is like the bank run in the It's a Wonderful World, Frank Capra film that you've all seen with Jimmy Stewart and whoever the woman who played his co-star in there. But they had that bank run. We are looking at something like the equivalent of a bank run. People are sitting back and saying, the U.S. bank is at least fragile. We're going to get our money and get it over into the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, which we think might be solid. What's the difference? The Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, it's new. People shouldn't be running to that new bank. What are they doing? They're running away from the United States. Insofar as they're running away from the United States, it indicates they don't think we're going to make it. They see enhanced risk. It doesn't mean that we are condemned to some sort of a collapse. It's not proof, but it is evidence that the probability is crossing a lot of people's minds. Say, I'm going to hedge my bet. I'm not going to only bet on the United States. I'm going to hedge my bet by placing another bet on the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. All of which is just the kind of evidence where you sit back and you say, what's that mean to Melody? What's that mean to me? What's it mean to you folks in the audience? It's just another one of those leaves in the breeze that suggests that the United States is in significant financial trouble, that the fiat dollar is certainly getting closer to the end of its run. Might end this year, might not end for 3-4 years. I don't know when it's going to end. But we're getting closer to the end, and people are beginning to get worried about it. And they're saying, ha, ha, ha. We're going to get clear. Again, the analogy of the rats leaving the sinking ship. It comes to mind. Foreign countries are beginning to swim away. And as they swim away and they say, we're afraid of dollars, We don't want to use them anymore. We are less enthusiastic. We will use them, but we're not as enthusiastic as we were 5 or 10 years ago. It's that enthusiasm that gives the dollar value in the first place. That's all that's supporting it. Once that goes, the dollar is going to tend to collapse into significant inflation, maybe even hyperinflation. And when it does, how do you protect your wealth? And the answer is gold, silver, tangible items. Let's take another break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Here's a couple articles on Hillary Clinton, who, as you all know, is the front candidate for winning the presidency in 2016, at least at the moment. A lot of time to go here. But here's something from the Daily Signal. It says, Clinton defies Benghazi committee, destroys remaining email. You probably already know about this. For Hillary Clinton, the deadline came and went to hand over personal email, the personal email server she used as Secretary of State to the House Select Committee on Benghazi. Not only did Clinton refuse the request, but through her attorney, she also revealed the server had been wiped clean. According to Representative Trey Gowdy, Republican South Carolina chairman of the Benghazi Committee, not only was the secretary, Clinton, sole arbitrator of what was a public record, she also summarily decided to delete all emails from her survey, ensuring that no one could check behind her analysis in the public interest. My point here is Hillary destroyed these emails concerning Benghazi. It appears to me to be obstruction of justice. I've been looking into the law a little bit on email lately, and once you know that your email may come up in a lawsuit, you're obligated to retain them, right? You might not be able to, you know, you can keep them or not keep them right now. But once it's apparent that you may have a lawsuit coming, you have an obligation to hold on to those emails, or at least that's the way I've understood the law myself. And Hillary's destruction of email looks like certainly a violation of that principle and maybe obstruction of justice. Clearly, whatever was in those emails must have been extremely important and extremely damaging to Hillary. Will Hillary's destruction of her Benghazi email diminish or even end her chances to run for the presidency in 2016? Or will the scandal die down and be forgotten before the end of this year? We'll talk about that in a moment. Here's another article. Hillary's emails deleted but not gone. The emails Clinton says she deleted from her personal server may still be recoverable. This is from Politico magazine. As Republican House leaders weigh whether to try to force former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to hand over her personal email server, experts say the messages she deleted from it, or at least portions of them, can almost certainly be recovered, although retrieving them could be time-intensive and expensive. So Hillary thinks the email are gone. Other people say, no, they're not. You can't actually wipe those servers as clean as you think, and it can be reassembled. And here's the one that's just came out today, new book coming out. This is from the Washington Times. Hillary bloodied Bill Clinton, forcing him to get stitches after learning of Lewinsky affair. Just as Hillary Rodham Clinton is preparing to launch her presidential campaign, a new behind-the-scenes book about life in the White House is providing a fresh look at her bitter fights with husband President Bill Clinton over the Monica Lewinsky affair, including a bloody clash in the first couple's bedroom. They go on and they tell a story, and she apparently, now Clinton says he cut his head, he fell down when he tried to run into the bathroom at one point. And she smashed him with a lamp hard enough to make him bleed all over and ultimately get stitches in his head. Well, this book, you know, we'll see how this turns out, written by someone who was there in the White House, or at least relying on someone who was there in the White House. I think the author was a White House deputy press secretary to Mrs. Clinton, and also worked for Clinton's campaign for the Senate in 2000. She's been a host on MSNBC. Her name is Finney. She's the one who's writing this book. And my part of this is, you know, it just amuses me. Bill got his head smacked. All right. And all by itself, that's amusing to me. But beyond that, with this book coming out right now, and with Hillary Clinton and her problem with destroying, it's been obvious, undenied, the woman has destroyed evidence, email that people wanted for a congressional survey. How much more heat can her campaign take before she just says, I'm out of here, I can't make this? I mean, is this going to push public sentiment against Hillary Clinton sufficiently where she can't be the Democratic nominee? Or is this going to be another blip on the radar and it'll all blow over in another 6 months and people won't even remember these kinds of things? What do you think, Melody?
People have short memories, and when it comes to Hillary, but they remember Lewinsky and her being the poor woman. And I mean, the people who tell me they're going to vote for Hillary because they like her, because she's a female, just to get a female in the office, is, you know, some of the same reasoning behind having Obama in the office that he places. So, I mean, people really have to look at records, and, you know, and you talk about her hitting Bill Clinton's head, and he came out and said that he fell down. Well, she fell down not too long ago too, so I wonder what really happened there. Maybe he, you know.
Well, when you fall down and you don't bleed, it's not generally that serious. When you fall down,
she had
according to the report,
no,
there was
no,
blood
she,
all over Clinton
no,
and all
had,
over the bed and the rest of that sort of thing.
Supposedly
she got him a good one. If the stories are true, she got him a good one.
Well, supposedly she had a concussion. Ow.
She did?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think she had
that
surgery.
Goes back a ways. That's not just in the last couple of weeks. That's back, what, 90 days ago or something like that?
Well, a year or so ago.
Oh, that long? All
right. Yeah. But I think she was resting up. But she has yet to make an announcement that she's actually running. And I still think the Democratic guy will be O'Malley. I think he's the one that, you know, will be the head runner. And I just don't – I think Hillary just – she's too old. And I think she just has too much baggage. And, I mean, the Republicans could – have a heyday if they bring out the information. And I don't mean, you know, using her age or anything against her, just what she has said, what she has done. What has she done? What has she done?
Well, she's put up with Bill Clinton. That,
everything
that proves
that
she has a certain amount of patience
everything
and
that
determination.
She has,
we have to give her credit for that.
Everything that she has touched or been involved in has not been successful.
I agree.
So,
I think that's
I mean,
a good point.
So, and all her years of being in politics, you'd think there would be something that she could take credit for. And but yet that has been
well,
a situation after situation.
Whether they're true or false. But you know, one of the things that impresses me, they made Rudy Giuliani, he made a point about 2-3 weeks ago about Obama. And he said, the problem with Obama is that he doesn't love this country. And when I think about it, I think that's the reason why the Constitution insists that presidents must be born in this country. When you're born in another country, I don't care how it works out, I think at least there's a possibility, a probability, you have some affection for that country. I don't care. You sign up to be a citizen of the United States. You move to any other country. I could move to Uruguay, for example. I might even shake up Uruguayan citizenship, if assuming under certain circumstances. But my heart would be with the United States of America. It would remain all my life, you know. You might be in another country, might take an oath of allegiance. There's reason to believe that Barack Obama doesn't love this country. And as such, he doesn't belong in the White House. And there's reason to believe, a lot of people believe, that Obama wasn't even born in this country. If he was, he would, in theory, have a natural affinity for this country. When I look at Hillary, does anyone think that Hillary loves this country? Does anyone catch a glimpse of that? Does anyone imagine that she's going to get a tear in her eye when somebody plays the national anthem? I don't think that's ever happened. Maybe it has, but I don't think that's ever happened, and I don't expect to see it. She'll go through the act. She'll go through, you know, do the little dance and pretend to be a patriot and the rest of it. But whatever is motivating her to become president, does anyone see that that motivation involves her love of America? Or is it more about her love of power and her love of some idea of changing America in a way that is dramatic and perhaps contrary to the best interests and desires of the American people? I don't think she loves this country. And on that basis, I think she doesn't belong in the White House. We need somebody who loves this country. All right? And I know there'll be plenty of people who can fake it, but I don't think she can even fake it. So, from my perspective, it'd be a good idea if she wasn't elected president. That would be a good thing, depending on who got it. You know, if she wasn't elected president, but Jeb Bush was, I'd still be sitting there shaking my head and say, oh, my God, what fools these mortals be. Yeah. Like, we need another Bush. We don't need another Clinton in the White House. We don't need another Bush in the White House. We don't need another Barack Obama in the White House. You know, one of the things you can look at, certainly with the George W. Bush administration for 8 years and the Barack Obama administration, which in theory will run for 8 years. Can anyone point to a 16-year period in all of American history where we lost more economic and political power than we have lost under Bush and now Obama? I don't think there's another time in American history from the beginning where we have suffered a decline as significant as what we've seen under these two administrations. And I don't think the decline is accidental. I think it's because they are both candidates for the New World Order. So is Bill Clinton, my opinion. They both favor this New World Order and the North American Union and bring as many illegal aliens in this country as we can in order to pollute this nation and make it impossible to separate ourselves from Mexico or ultimately Canada. Something's got to be done about this, and I think one of the protections against more decline. We need someone in the White House who actually loves this country. You know, Reagan comes to mind. And I'm not arguing that Reagan was perfect or anything like that, but I don't think anyone could miss the idea that the man loved this country. He might have made mistakes. He might have been, you know, sleeping on the job. A bunch of things you can criticize him for if you care to. But his love for this country was, it seems to me, undeniable and infectious.
Unless he was playing a part.
I don't think he was, though. You know, it's, anything's possible. But even if he was playing the part, I still helped this country. Even if it was just an act, I don't think Hillary can make the act. And Obama hasn't tried to make the act. When was the last time you saw Obama act as if he loved this country? I don't see it. I can't recall it happening.
I think Bush, I mean, you talk about at least projecting that he loved this country. I would think Bush, in many instances, showed that he loved this country.
I don't think so. From my perspective, he was sitting down and openly encouraging illegal aliens to come into this country.
Oh, agreed.
He's doing what he could. Bush is perhaps, I'll agree that he was more.
None of them loved that country.
But in the end, I mean, Bush was, to me, just acting. I mean,
well,
we
Reagan
can wonder
didn't
whether
do all
Reagan
that
was
much.
Acting, but we don't wonder whether Bush was acting.
Reagan did a lot of things to this country that you'd have to say or question whether he loved this country or not. He had a charisma. You liked the man.
Yep.
You know, he came across, but that doesn't mean a lot of his actions and so forth was good for this country. And in direct conflict of his
balance.
Love of the country.
You look at balance. You get at that scale, and on this side, we got the things where people mess up. And on the other side, we have the part where they did good. When you hold that scale for Hillary, in terms of patriotism, in terms of love of country, I can't see anything. I see one side where she's out to settle accounts. She's going to make this country pay, take this country down. She is an advocate of values that are not about what's good for America. She's an advocate of values that are what's good for the New World Order or whatever. I just don't see her really caring. I don't see that she's going to make a decision based on the idea this is good for America. Her decisions will be based on some other values, some other objectives.
Her
and
own.
I just don't see her doing that. And from my perspective, I think this is a big issue. I think this is the kind of can that can be tied to her tail, essentially, and people sit back and say, hey, wait a second. We don't need another president who doesn't love this country. I don't know if we're going to find one who does love this country. I don't know if there's a politician in Washington who loves this country as much as they love their own career. Huh? But nevertheless, we should look for one that at least appears to fill that gap, play that role. We're out of time, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Seems to be a single penny left for me.